Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil,
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, el 1-1. Esto es el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I've had a very, very exciting weekend.
I made
pasta.
Lovely.
For the first time in my life, I made the pasta.
You made everything from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you look at it, wow. You go, it's kind of, well, you know, it's cheap. Pasta's cheap. It's not expensive. Seems like a lot of hassle to make your own, but it was worth it in the end because it was delicious.
So what type of pasta did you make?
Long, thin, scriggly bits.
Yeah.
It's classic Italian pasta, that long, thin, scriggly pasta.
Lovely.
I think probably something that looks remotely like, a bit like linguine, I would say.
Oh, okay. That sounds, and was it nice?
It was nice. The sauce, you know, obviously had a big part to play in that, but that took about 3 hours to make as well, the sauce. So, I just spent all day cooking. That was the highlight of my weekend. How was your weekend?
It was all right. I was on a stag do in Norwich, an exotic location. And on Saturday night, I ended up in a nightclub is the only term I can think of to apply to it, but it really was a portal to another dimension.
I have to
give a shout out to Chris James, who follows me on Instagram and I think is a fan of the show, because I said that I was in a nightclub in Norwich and he spotted it as the waterfront. And he said, "I'm so sorry for you, but also so, so jealous." And I think that sort of sums it up. It was kind of glorious in its awfulness.
Right.
So shout out to the waterfront in Norwich. He said, "I hope they still sell cans of Red Stripe for a quid." I'm not sure if they quite do, but it's not far off that.
Wow. A pound for a drink in a nightclub is pretty good.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I think in rural Britain, it is still possible. You know, once you get out of the big, big cities.
Rural Britain. I love it. I love the idea of that. Yeah. Well.
So that was my weekend, but okay. I'm fully recovered. I'm ready for a football match, which feels really strange. I think, as far as I'm concerned, it does feel like the season ended quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it all starts again.
Yeah, there's a game. It is a bit weird, isn't it? Because it's not as if there hasn't been a lot of talk about the Europa League final, but not much of it has been focused on the football or the football match. There's been all the other stuff that's been going on around it in terms of travel, in terms of Mkhitaryan, in terms of all those things. But now we're faced with the harsh reality of an actual game of football coming up in a little over 48 hours. How are you feeling about it? Because for me, it's been sort of distant and on the long finger, even though it has been something that, you know, we're writing about on the site, we're talking about on the podcast all the time. But it's been sort of over there. It's a bit like, you know, when you sort of get asked to do something and you go, "Yeah, okay, I'll do that. It's ages away. That'll never happen." And then eventually it creeps up on you and you go, "Ah, what'd I do that for? Why'd I say I'd go to that thing?"
But it's kind of indefinitely on the horizon, and then suddenly the horizon arrives. I know exactly what you mean. And I think in this next couple of days, because we've been discussing everything around the game without actually discussing the game, I've sort of not felt quite as nervous about it as I ordinarily would about a cup final. I dreamt about the game last night.
I've seen a few people say that. How did your dream go?
Weirdly, it finished 0-0 and that was it. There was no extra time or penalties. It was just a draw. And so nobody got the Champions League qualification place. And in the dream, Aubameyang missed a penalty and a really good one-on-one.
Oh.
And then I was left in this quandary afterwards of, you know, do you criticise him for that? Or, you know, he's been such a fantastic goal scorer all season. I'm already thinking about, you know, the stick I'm going to get for having an opinion after the game. Mm. Maybe that's my real anxiety. But yeah, so that would suggest my subconscious is now firmly trained on the match in question.
Yes, it's hard to avoid it. It really is. I haven't had any dreams yet, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Don't worry.
We'll see what happens. So the team flew out to Baku. The squad flew out to Baku at the weekend. I think the... It's not really a big issue, but I suppose the one thing that is striking is the fact that Danny Welbeck is in the squad and therefore you assume will be fit to play a part, some small part, whatever it might be, from the bench. We can name 12 substitutes, of course, so there was room in the squad. 24-man squad went out with young players like Bukayo Saka, Xabi Amici, Joe Willock. Dejan Iliev is the young goalkeeper in there as well. So nothing too unexpected, but good to see Welbeck on the plane, because without Mkhitaryan, we do lack an experienced attacking option. And he provides that, even if it's only going to be for 20 minutes, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of a concern about how much sort of ring rust might be there and how ready he is to play in a game of this magnitude. But he's come back before with quite dramatic impact. So, and has hit the ground running, I think, pretty much every time he's come back from a long-term injury. So I think that's quite encouraging. And in the absence of Mkhitaryan, having an experienced attacking player to come on is really important. And, you know, one gets the sense that he might have had an eye on this game all throughout his rehab and thought that might be something I could shoot for. And, you know, with the fact that he is definitely leaving Arsenal, and we had that absolutely for the final time confirmed by Raul and Vinay in their interview with the official website, this would be a wonderful way to say goodbye if he could come on and make an impact.
Yeah, it would be amazing, wouldn't it? If he could do what he did against Leicester. Now, you know, I would love that if it happened. I'm not sure how much I'd love the whole circumstances up to that, though, you know? A game being that tight. I'm sort of hoping for 3 or 5 first half goals for Arsenal so we can relax in the second half.
It feels like he'd probably only get on if things were quite desperate, because we'll have Lacazette and Aubameyang on the pitch from the start. And, you know, unless they're tiring late in the game and they want to give someone a run out. But it feels like Welbeck is someone you'd need to sort of break glass in case of emergency.
Or you bring him on because the game is won and you want to give him a few minutes. You know,
though.
Or, of course, the other eventuality is, I suppose, and we'll touch wood here, of course, is an injury to somebody which might require his introduction into the game. But he does provide a little bit more attacking reassurance and gives us a little bit of quality and experience that I think we might well need in this game.
From the Chelsea end, there's been a little bit of team news. I don't know if you saw, but it looks as if, and again, I'm going to touch wood, but it looks as if N'Golo Kante might not make it now.
That's good. I mean, that's good for us.
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, we know Kante's a really good player, and I feel like he's in some way sort of the antidote to our midfield. You know, Kante against Xhaka feels like physically such a mismatch. I know Torreira's maybe got a little bit more of that intensity to his game, but I do feel that's sometimes where we fall a bit short in central midfield, that intensity, that pressing, that sprinting. So if they don't have him, I would like that very much.
Yes, I would too, and I'm not, you know, wishing injury on anybody except for every single Chelsea player between now and Wednesday.
Especially Eden Hazard, yeah.
Eden Hazard, but, you know. Look, any little advantage we can get is good. I'm cautious, though, because I remember games in the past where we've gone into fixtures against teams and they've had makeshift starting 11s, and you look at it on paper and you think, yes, we should be able to do this, and we aren't. The game that springs to mind immediately for me is going back to the Welbeck goal against Leicester, and I think our next game, or maybe the game after, was against Manchester United away. And
Rashford.
They started Rashford up front, and he had, this was maybe his first Premier League start, and I think they had a back four of some bloke, a chair, Fosu Mensah, and I don't know what, maybe Phil Jones or something like that. And you're looking at it going, yes, this is a defence that we can really get at. And of course, we make Rashford a star as we do. So I'm always a bit cautious in terms of what the opposition are missing, because I do feel like maybe it lulls us into a bit of a sense of security in a way.
I mean, you're looking at a Chelsea midfield trio of Barkley, Jorginho and Kovacic. Still some decent players in there, but that feels like we might be able to dominate in that area of the pitch. I don't know. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but look, Kante being out, assuming it does go that way, would be really helpful.
Yes. A lot of focus, of course, will be on our team and what we do and what sort of a team selection Unai Emery puts out. So we have a question. We're going to go through the questions throughout the podcast here rather than just in part two, because there are going to be talking points that are addressed in the questions. And of course, lots of people have asked this one. Mark Holmes at Holmster 79, who says, what would your starting 11 be for the final? Now, this is what your starting 11 will be and not necessarily what you think Unai Emery will do. Would you do anything different from what you think Unai Emery is going to do?
I mean, I'm in two minds. So I think given the way we got to this final, it is tempting to kind of stick with the back three, which kind of picks itself, really. I'm assuming it's going to be Petr Cech in goal. And then
there's a talking point again.
Well, yeah, yeah. And then a back three of Monreal, Koscielny, Sokratis, wing backs of Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac. Then in front of that, Xhaka and Torreira, and then Mesut Ozil behind Aubameyang and Lacazette.
Yeah.
The only sort of thought I keep having is I do wonder if there's a slight chance he goes to a back four.
Yes.
Maybe with Monreal at left back, say, and Maitland-Niles at right back. And then a diamond, so he would, I suppose, have sort of Xhaka, Torreira and Guendouzi, and then Ozil behind the front two. It's a possibility. I feel like we used a system like that in the league against them. We won that game at the Emirates Stadium. So I'm sort of caught between two stools a little bit with that. What about you? What do you think?
I think he'll go with the back three, but I would be tempted by the back four as well. Sokratis and Koscielny in a back four. I think probably with Monreal as well at left back. It's just because we have a load of questions here as well from people. Tony Kent, for example, at 2-0 down, who says, in Ramsey's absence and consisting how well it worked in the league, who do you see doing the Jorginho tracking job in the final? I can't see Emery trusting Ozil with it. Big game for Iwobi, maybe. Now, that's, you know, assuming that Emery is going to do in this game what he did in the last game. Maybe he's got a different plan.
Maybe, but there would seem to be a logic to it, wouldn't there? I mean, everything for Chelsea do kind of goes through Jorginho. And if you close him down and give him problems and take him out of the game, we have seen he can struggle under that pressure. I mean, the thing is that Mesut Ozil, I think, does have the athletic tools to be able to do that job. It's just not his natural mentality, is it, to spend 90 minutes buzzing around a defensive midfielder?
Look, he can run. There's no question about it, but he can't tackle, and I don't think he's particularly defensively, his defensive positioning is not great, whereas Ramsey, who's used to playing more or has played a lot of his career deeper in the midfield, is more positionally aware, I think, whereas Ozil, he thrives when he's got freedom. if he's shackled one way or the other, whether that is by being asked to do that kind of a job, which I think would be completely mental, by the way, and I don't think that's what will happen, or if he's marked out of the game or if he's paid special attention, I think he finds it much more difficult to have an impact on a game. So whatever about the opposition putting people on Ozil, if we ask Ozil to do a job that is not his, we immediately completely and utterly negate anything positive that we might get from him. So I can't see how that would work.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the diamond does slightly appeal to me, because when we play that way, Torreira often sort of plays as the right-hand side, but gets into quite advanced positions. And he is someone who really can close the space and put a lot of pressure on, you know, a player who wants time on the ball. And so shifting him a little bit higher up the field, you know, could really disrupt Chelsea. That's why I do sort of keep coming back to that. I mean, do you think...
Go on.
Do you think Ozil will start this game? Because I have seen a bit of debate, like you, about Ozil kind of versus Iwobi in that number 10 role. It's more for Iwobi's defensive qualities than anything else. So do you think there's any chance that, that Emery sees it like that too?
It really depends on how much of a threat he views Jorginho to the way that Chelsea want to play, or to us, you know? If he really wants to put somebody, if he's going to play a back three and he wants to put somebody on Jorginho, then Mesut Ozil is not that guy. He's just not that guy. Whereas Iwobi, I think, is more capable of doing that than Ozil. So it's, you know, potentially it's possible. But I guess it depends on what way Emery is viewing the Chelsea threat, or how he views the best way to create opportunities against Chelsea, because he might think the wingbacks are the best way to do it. You know, and that way then he goes to the tried and trusted, get the ball to Kolasinac so he can bang it in the box, and same with Maitland-Niles on the right-hand side, and he can deliver into the box. I mean, I wonder as well if there might be a bit of a double bluff in terms of trying to outdo Sarri's preparations. Because I suspect Sarri will expect us to play with a back three. So I wonder, in order to put a bit of a spanner in his works, if he might just go with the back four. You know, it's difficult, because you then, if you have to correct that and you want to go to a back three, it strikes me that probably it's wiser to start with a back three. And if you really need to change it, you can remove one of the defensive players and put somebody more attacking on. Whereas if you're starting with a back four and it doesn't work, you then try and revert to a back three to get your wingbacks into the game, which seems like a slightly negative attacking change, if that makes sense, because you can see what he's trying to do, but immediately you're adding an extra defender to things. So
yeah, I guess the way I would do it, if I was going to go that way, is you'd have Kolasinac on the bench and he would come on, so you'd just tuck Monreal in.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know what you mean, but it's not a hugely negative change, just because Kolasinac probably is going better going forward than backwards. But it is hard to say, and I think... Yeah, I mean, I think the wing-backs are integral, because it's like, to what extent do you trust them in a four? Like, do you think Maitland-Niles against Eden Hazard in a back four potentially is a risk? I mean, yes, it is a risk, but it's a risk we're sort of going to have to take almost irrespective. So it's really difficult. I think my inclination would probably be to go to something like the Diamond, and I know that might seem like a maverick choice, but I just think it gives you options in the midfield. You know, you could play Guendouzi, Xhaka. If you really want, you can always play Torreira as the apex of that diamond and slip Iwobi into one of the wide areas. There's lots of different variations. Or you can play Ozil, but just know you've got that combative midfield trio behind him. I think Monreal and Maitland-Niles probably will still give you enough going forward from fullback. And obviously the game is going to be focused so much around the front too. I think Ozil will play.
Yeah.
I think he... I think he will play.
I think he will too, but I think, you know, the more you talk about it, I think the more it makes sense to play with a back four if you're going to start Mesut Ozil in this game, because there is a danger that if you are playing a back three and just two in midfield, that there are too many gaps, if you like, between the midfield and the attacking end of the pitch. And we've seen that a bit too often this season, where, you know, if we do get down the sides and if we are attacking well and we're getting balls in from wide areas, then it is effective. But through the middle and in the sort of the creative hub of the pitch, we're not that effective. And I don't know that Ozil plays that well in this system, does he? I mean, he's the obvious guy to sit behind the two strikers, but if the system means that the ball is not coming to him, if it's going left to Kolasinac or right to Maitland-Niles, then he becomes a little bit isolated in some ways and ineffective. Whereas if you do play with a back four and you've got three behind him in midfield, which gives a little bit more supply to him, but also a little bit more of a defensive platform, then I think that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, well, it will be fascinating because Emery, you know, we know he likes to sometimes sort of second guess the opposition manager, and he's had so much time to build up for this game. You know, he might sort of third or fourth guess them. He might have been through several plans already in his mind, and it will be really fascinating to see what he actually goes for in Baku. They're already there, aren't they? They're training in Baku now.
Yeah, they are.
I suppose some people will be listening to this on their way to Baku, some fans. So
safe travels to you guys.
Safe travels to you guys. You are the heroes.
Safe, I saw long travels.
Official UEFA statement saying that, or from the stadium maybe it was, saying that we have almost sold our 6,000 allocation now. Chelsea more like 2,000. So are the Arsenal voices should be louder than the Chelsea voices at the very least in the stadium?
I hope so. Actually, there was
the corporate voices will be very loud, though, chanting the names of Gazprom or whoever it is. That'll ring around the stadium.
Who are the sponsors? Come on, you FedEx-sponsored professional athletes.
Yeah, exactly.
Kia Motors is behind you all the way.
FedEx, Kia. Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Oh, yeah. That's how you get to Baku and back. You just...
Exactly. They should have offered a deal.
They should have.
And Hankook Tire and Technology.
Tire and Technology. Okay.
Not Tire Technology, Tire and Technology.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we have a question here from Henry Powell at AFC. Henry P. Is there a dangerous possibility that most of the crowd could be supporting Chelsea in the final due to the Mickey saga? I mean, maybe, but I don't think it makes any difference. I don't think it'll make any difference, really, do you?
No. I mean, I suppose it'll feel a bit like a World Cup game, you know, where there's a lot of neutrals in the stands and they sort of just cheer everything kind of irrespective and go with the flow. I mean, ultimately, the locals who are there presumably will be delighted to see two big Premier League teams turn up and play on their doorstep. But, you know, it'll be up to the people at Kia and the people at FedEx to really decide which way the crowd is. I trust those 6,000 Arsenal fans to make themselves heard. You know, they do it up and down the country. And the ones who have made the trip to Baku will be very, very devoted fans. And I think we will hear Arsenal songs in that stadium. However dimly, we will hear them.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, we got to move on to the, as we're talking about the team, to the Czech thing. And I talked about this with Charles Watts on the podcast on Friday. My position hasn't really changed.
I've not listened to that one yet. What did you say Friday?
Well, basically that I think Petr Cech is a great guy and a real professional, and I have no doubts whatsoever over his focus for this game. You know, this story about him going back to Chelsea as a sporting director has put ants in people's pants, which you can understand to an extent. But as much as I respect him and think it would be an amazing fairy tale thing for him to go out with a European trophy win against his former club and maybe the club he's going back to, I would start Bernd Leno in goal, even though it would feel, as I think I said on Friday, a bit like kicking a puppy. You know, it is a big, big game, possibly the most important game in this club's recent history. There's the chance to win a Europa League or a European trophy. There is, of course, the entry into the Champions League and all the associated financial implications of that. I think you play your best team as much as you possibly can, and I think Leno is our best goalkeeper. Therefore, I would play him in this game. And it's a hard decision and a difficult decision on a human level, but that's what I would do.
It feels a little bit different to the instances we had in the past with Fabianski and Ospina because of the fact that it's Czech's final game. You know, in those instances, you could be like, well, they're leaving the club. Half the time they were on their way out the door and there was a sense of, yeah, we owe nothing to them. They're going, you know, on a free transfer or whatever it might be. Let's not, you know, put them before players who are going to be at the club long term. I think the fact that it's his last match adds like an extra layer of sentiment to the situation.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
But it is kind of just sentiment, you know? And
but can you ignore sentiment? I mean,
no. I mean, I'm not saying I could do it. I'm not saying I could say, Petr, I know I said you'd play the Europa League games this season, but you're out. Sorry. I would find that an incredibly difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I think any normal human being would find that a very difficult thing to do. You know,
do you think of the idea that...
Go on.
What I was going to say is, what do you think of the idea that dropping Czech would somehow cost Emery within the squad? Like it might, you know, provoke some dissent or some unhappiness. Do you think there's anything in that?
I think there might be, because, you know, it's been clear to everybody that Petr Cech has had his eye on this game for a really long time. You know, as his swan song in a long and storied professional career, he's spoken about it numerous times. He's spoken about the possibility that it could be against Chelsea. You know, he's spoken about it in the last couple of weeks. He is clearly hugely invested in making the final game of his career a successful one. And you can understand that. I think Cech is one of the most respected players in our dressing room. They all speak highly of him as a player and a person. So if it were a case that Cech was ditched on the eve of the final or the 11th hour, I think it's certainly possible that the players, as much as they might understand the decision and they go out and they'll do the job, they'll, you know, play as well as possible, might be. I mean, why wouldn't they be? It's a teammate who is obviously going to be distraught at that decision if it happens. He'd be devastated. There's no two ways about it. He would be devastated.
I mean, the other thing, the other side of this coin is that, can you imagine anyone being more motivated than Cech heading into this game?
No.
And, yeah, you know, and to what extent will the players also want this for him? If he is held in this esteem within the dressing room, you know, they will want him to go out on a high, and he will be absolutely determined to go out on a high. And I think, you know, that might make Emery's mind up. If he is caught in two minds, at least he can say, well, I know this guy's going to give it absolutely everything. And I don't have any inclination that the fact that he will be joining Chelsea as a suit next season affects remotely what he does on the pitch. I don't think he'll care. I don't think if he's there next season, he'll be like, well, thank goodness I lost the Europa League final and they've got that trophy. I don't think that will mean anything to him. I think his playing career is entirely separate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I think we also overlook perhaps the fact that Cech has played well in the Europa League, and particularly in the knockout rounds, two clean sheets against Napoli. I remember a couple of really good saves against Napoli as well. You know, he did his part against Valencia as well. So, you know, I don't think it's as big an issue in terms of quality that some of these decisions have been in the past. It's just a really weird thing, isn't it, that in every cup final we've played in the last number of years, we've had this discussion about which of our goalkeepers should play. And somehow the cup goalkeeper always gets the nod. And so far, so good. And may it continue that way, because I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, I think, is it not sort of almost a policy that we sort of have to stick to, in the same way that, you know, if you give a young player games, it convinces young players to come and join you. If you're a big club and you need to have a decent second choice goalkeeper, is it not something you have to enact to be like, look, you will get some opportunities here and you can have some glory, and it enables you to, you know, maybe recruit a second choice goalkeeper that you might not otherwise be able to get. I mean, as we've said before, if it is Emi Martinez who steps up next season, I somehow doubt he'll be sort of protected and his position, you know, kept solid and his as quite as much as Cech's has been. You can talk yourself into circles on this one. I do think to a certain extent it's moot, because I feel like the decision has been made for a long time and that it will be Cech. But you never know. You never know. We don't know Emery like we knew Arsene, and we knew what Arsene would do in this scenario.
Yeah.
But maybe Emery's going to spring a surprise.
Yeah. I would be surprised. You know, he's talked about what an amazing guy Cech is and everything else. And, you know, I think maybe we talk ourselves into an anxiousness among ourselves as fans that isn't maybe there within the squad, or certainly in Emery's mind. You know, do you think he really thinks it's that cut and dry? I'm not sure he does, and I don't think any of the Arsenal players going out there will be going, ooh, I wish we had burned Leno. I don't really think that's the case.
Has Cech really done anything this season to deserve that in his performances? I mean, I think maybe his sort of lack of sure-footedness on the ball is the only thing that really springs to mind, which is an important attribute, don't get me wrong. But I think in terms of the other aspects of his game, I think he's actually been really consistent.
Yeah, I think he's
very good.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's made good saves. The thing you'd say is that Leno is a better distributor of the ball.
Yeah.
Short and long. Cech tends to go long a bit too often for a team that doesn't really have an outlet for that. You know, when we had Olivier Giroud, for example, you at least can fire balls towards a big 6'3" striker who can flick them on or can take it down. We don't really have anyone in this team who is capable of doing that. Now, you know,
If you don't play Iwobi, I guess he's the one player who does sometimes do that.
I mean, and that tells you a lot about, you know, the squad makeup, that if Alex Iwobi is seen as the guy who is our outball, our target man in a way, you know, that says a lot about the squad, which isn't to criticise Iwobi, but more everything else. Then again, you think about the first goal against Valencia. After they'd scored, it was a long ball downfield from Cech. Lacazette flicked it on. Aubameyang scored it. You know, so it's not to say that just there's only one way of playing, but look, I think you're right. We're talking ourselves in circles. I think Cech is going to play, and I hope he has a brilliant final game in his career, because,
it would be a really fantastic way to go out, and I hope nothing befalls him like what happened to the Charlton goalkeeper at Wembley. Did you see that?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Well, he got away with it in the end, didn't he? Right at the death. These playoff finals are amazing. Year after year, they throw up incredible games and late drama and everything else, and mentally.
Should be another good one in the Championship. Villa play Derby today. Did you see anything of Christian Bielik in that game? Just quickly,
I did watch a bit. He got man of the match. Look, he's done well. He's done well. But, I feel like with Bielik, there's this, look, he's done really well for Charlton. He could come in and do a great job for us, which ignores the fact that he's done a great job for Charlton in League One. Two divisions down. You know, people talking about him being a replacement for Xhaka in midfield, and I've looked at him and I've watched him a bit, and he's a good footballer, Bielik. But if you think Xhaka is slow on the turn, you know, Bielik is not necessarily, he's doing a job in there in central midfield for Charlton, whereas, you know, they've said all along, and their assistant manager said the other week that, you know, he's the centre half. That's his job, you know, and he's
played in both positions in the final, I think.
So, you know, look, congratulations to him. He's had a fantastic season. He goes off to the European Under 21 Championships. Here's a question from Ali Karim, who's at Ali_Bob. And he says, based on sentiment alone, how would you prefer to win the Europa League? A Leicester-style Danny Welbeck winner in the final minute, or an heroic Petr Cech penalty save with Arsenal 1-0 up with a minute remaining?
I don't think anything beats a winning goal, I have to say. A late winning goal is glorious when it comes. And I've always had a soft spot for Danny Welbeck. I think, you know, he seems like a really good guy. And that Leicester moment, it's a real shame that it's not sort of treasured like it should be. So I would go for, I think on balance, I'd go for the Welbeck. Just the joy of snatching it at the last second, I think, would be too much for me to resist. What about you?
Yeah, I think a goal is always better than a save for me. I mean, that the
Lehman Riquelme one is one that springs to mind, you know, as a late penalty save that was of massive value.
That's true. That's true. And that was a good moment as well. But I wouldn't fancy Petr Cech against Eden Hazard.
No.
With all due respect to our goalkeeper.
If Chelsea get a penalty on Wednesday night, it's a goal. I'm telling you now. Because Hazard doesn't really miss and Cech doesn't really save.
Yeah.
So don't give away any penalties, boys. And we will have VAR in play. It will be our first taste of Socrates versus VAR. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch play out.
There is an additional layer of something to this final, isn't it? Anything else that you can think of from a team point of view or from a tactical point of view that we need to discuss? Because
I just from the squad point of view, I thought it was interesting to see which youngsters got a call up, you know, looking ahead to next season. I found it, you know, to see Saka in there, to see Amici in there. I know it's literally making up the numbers, but is encouraging because Saka sort of, after a little spell in the team, in and around the first team, had slightly fallen away from contention, but I think looks like a really exciting prospect.
Mm.
In terms of the team that plays, I'm not sure. Let me have a think. I mean, it's a massive game for someone like Maitland-Niles. It's funny, isn't it? Because of what's happened with Hector Bellerin and because of the fact he's been pretty consistent, really, since coming in, pretty good in some instances, we sort of accept him now as a first-team player, but we forget that at the start of this season, he really was not anything like a regular, and yet now he's going to be starting a European final, you know, academy product. I forget how old he is, 19, 20.
Who, Maitland-Niles?
Yeah.
He's older than that. He's older than you think. I think he's older than you think. Is he 21 now?
Let's have a look.
Yeah, he's 21. He's going to be 22 in August. So
he's quite a lot older than I think, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. He went out on loan to Ipswich a good few years ago.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, he's at an age where, you know, he's had two seasons of establishing himself as a first-team squad member.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it's a big night for all these players because of, you know, there's history to be made. When you think about it, there is history to be made because we do not have a great European final history. You know, we don't have that many European trophies in our cabinet. So there's a chance for whoever plays and in this squad to make themselves, I won't say legendary, but, you know, if we beat Chelsea on Wednesday night, these guys go down in the annals, in the history books of Arsenal Football Club as a team that won a European trophy for the first time in 25 years. So, yeah.
I think all our sort of fixation with Champions League qualification, well, in my case, certainly does sort of sometimes lead me to overlook the fact that there is a European trophy up for grabs here.
Yeah.
And that would be quite an incredible thing for us to have. Also, Arsenal put out a tweet yesterday saying our journey so far, and they showed all our goals from the Europa League. And it's been quite a campaign to get to this point. I think because it's sort of a second-class competition, when we've arrived in the final, we sort of greet it with a little bit with a shrug and a sense of like, well, you know, this is the least we could expect. And I think because we fluffed the league so much, this feels like a consolation, but I think...
I don't know if it feels like a consolation to me, really. It feels like a chance at redemption.
Right.
More than consolation, because, you know, we could finish fourth and get into the Champions League, and that's great, but a trophy is better. Winning a final is better. Putting another notch on our whatever European belt, you know, that's better. And I think there's been a weird thing about this game, because the season finished, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
Two and a half weeks ago. The game rolls around, I think, yeah.
The gap between the end of the season and this game is too long, I think.
Mm.
The game itself has been overshadowed by the logistical issues, the political issues, Mkhitaryan, all that stuff has not necessarily cast a shadow over it, but it has to some extent dampened the fact that we are in a European final. And it's fucking great to be in a European final. It's, what, 13 years since Paris. Before that, it was 2000, the UEFA Cup. Before that, 1995. And then, you know, the year before that, of course, we won the Cup Winners' Cup. So, you know, for a club that demands success, or certainly fans demand success and demand improvement and development and all those things, it has been a little bit weird that the game and the importance of the game has been put to one side slightly by all these other issues. And I think sitting here now talking to you, it's coming into sharp focus just how big this is. And people can say it's just the Europa League and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we don't really have any chance of winning the Champions League, or didn't look like a team that could win the Champions League all the years that we were in it. You know,
exactly.
I think
we might not for some time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we want to be back in the Champions League, and I understand that, and I want us to be back in there too. But, you know, the weird thing is that if we get in there, it's going to be via the European competition that probably best suits our level. So yeah. I think we have to just sort of step back a little bit, understand the importance of the game, but also look at it as a real opportunity for this football club to do something that it hasn't done for a really long time. And I guarantee you that at whatever time the final whistle blows on Wednesday night, if we have won that trophy, the celebrations will be huge, and rightly so, because it's a massive, massive game for this football club.
Yeah, and I want us to get back in the Champions League as much as anyone. And then I want us to go out of it and back into the Europa League that we might actually win. That to me seems like the perfect formula.
We could just do that. Yeah, we could just do that cycle. We go out in the group stage, back into the Europa League, win the Europa League, back into the Champions League, get that bit of money, invest in the squad.
Get knocked out again. Actually have a chance of winning something. It's a perfect, foolproof formula.
Especially with Unai Emery as the boss.
I think that's basically what Sevilla did for years. So, I think that's a real prospect. But look, it's a massive game. And what I meant to say about watching all these goals back and watching all these games we've played, I think it's such a slog to get to the final that you don't sort of celebrate it as you go. You know, you get out of the group stage, well, you expect that. You beat, you know, whoever it is, Ludogorets, you expect that. That was last season, but you know what I mean, Bate. But when you look back, we have scored some great goals, and we have beaten in Valencia and Napoli a couple of really decent teams. I mean, Valencia won the cup final against Barcelona the other day. So I think we also have to celebrate it as an achievement to get to this point. It's been a decent run, and it should and could have a really fantastic ending on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's 15 games we've played to get to the final. This will be the 16th game. So, look,
it's coming on for half a league season. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a lot of games.
It is a lot of football. I don't know what else to say about it other than it's really starting to hit home that we have a football match now. And maybe those other distractions have allowed us not to think about, you know, I mean, you can think about winning, of course, but you also have to think about what happens if we don't. That's why the distractions are kind of welcome in a way, because it means you don't have to consider the possibility of things going poorly on Wednesday night. But hopefully, fingers crossed, that won't be the case. I think we should take a break. We'll take a break and do some more questions and stuff in the second part. Will we do that?
Yes, let's do that. All right. Let's have half time.
Halftime indeed. Back after this.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. Also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog, and on the ArsBlog Patreon member Discord server, which you can get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. You can sign up for just a fiver a month at patreon.com/ArsBlog. James, I'll let you go first today. I'm feeling kind and generous and full of pasta.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much. Well, this is from Peter Hust on Twitter, at Peter Hust. And Peter says, good morning, gents. Goodly morning, in fact. It's especially goodly after we celebrated Anfield 89 yesterday. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
30 years.
How did you see, by the way? I mean, did you manage to see over all the people standing in front of you on the terraces at Anfield?
I was being held aloft like Simba in The Lion King. No, I mean, honestly, no memory of it at all. But, you know, it's my cultural heritage, you know. I was kind of...
Sure.
It's come to me later in life, but I still absolutely seize upon the opportunity to laugh at Liverpool. Anyhow, Peter's question is, who do you expect, apart from Petr Cech, will be playing their last game for the Arsenal in Baku on Wednesday?
Well, some of them probably won't play.
Sure. So Danny Welbeck, if he gets on.
We're talking about the squad members who may not be here next season.
Yeah.
Welbeck, obviously.
Of course.
Lichtsteiner.
Yes, you would think so.
Jenkinson.
Mm-hmm.
Good old Corporal.
Never rule it out. You never know with Jenkinson.
Imagine Carl Jenkinson scored the winner in the Europa League final.
That would be absolutely incredible.
I think he would just... He could retire, but I think he might just explode in a kind of orgasm of Arsenal achievement. We'd witness the first footballer ever to just disappear on the pitch in a cloud of his own jizz.
Spontaneously combust.
Jenkins spunk everywhere.
It would be a beautiful sight.
Well,
beautiful sight.
Well, the goal would be the rest.
The goal. The explosion of jizz, I'm less sure about.
I think possibly Elneny.
Mm-hmm.
And Mustafi. Although I'm a little less convinced about Mustafi leaving than I was.
What did you make of Mustafi's comments? We had a couple of questions about those. Did you see them in the week about the criticism and how he's not really focused?
I choose, in the build-up to a European final...
Yes.
...and this gigantically important game for Arsenal Football Club, for the club itself, for the players, for the fans, for everybody associated with the football club, to... how do I do this? Take the Fifth Amendment...
Sure.
...on Mustafi's comments and choose to focus instead on the potential for success. And maybe those are comments we could come back to...
Okay.
...at a different stage.
In due course.
In due course, because I don't think it serves anybody for us to go into those in any great depth today.
It's not good for the squad morale, is it? For us to rake over those comments.
No, I don't think so. But those are the players that I think won't be around next season. What about you? Anyone else?
Well, the name that strikes me was missing from your list was that of Mesut Ozil.
Mm.
Who a lot of people seem to think, you know, might be approaching the end of his Arsenal career. But I do think that that's a job easier said than done, to be honest.
It is.
However much you might want to move him on, you know, I don't think it's going to be easy. And actually, since we last spoke, I think the second half of the Raul and Vinay interview came out. And their comments about Aaron Ramsey, I thought were kind of, without being about Mesut Ozil, he was also kind of implicit within them. Do you know what I mean? About the salary and the disruption
for
the
squad. We're not doing that again. Fuck, are you mad?
Yeah.
That's what it was, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. And it was clearly, you know, we liked Aaron, we sort of were interested in keeping him, but it just wasn't right for the balance of the squad to put that much money into one player. And it was around the time they made that decision on Ramsey that Mesut Ozil was, you know, regularly being left out at Arsenal. And I actually think that, you know, some of the heat that Emery took off that, I think should be shared really across the management, because it always seemed to me like it was a joint harmonised strategy.
Yes, I think as well. You know, we probably also have to factor in the players' side and the players' agent side of things as well. Mm. In that, you know, if they were looking for a Bosman to open doors to big European clubs, they also played it very well. You know, and I love Aaron Ramsey and I wish we were keeping him, but, you know, we can't simply overlook the fact that we didn't sell him last summer. He also didn't sign when there was a contract on the table. You know, there was a contract there that he didn't sign.
And it wasn't before that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
There were offers and, you know, it wasn't as if it was just in the last few months that we offered him a contract. So, look, the whole thing is, you know, it's not the finest hour of this football club in terms of how we've managed a situation with a very good, important and financially valuable player. But look, that's by the by now. So,
Ozil is one who, if the club find a way to sell Mesut Ozil, I think they will do it. But I think it will be difficult. I think I would guess, like you, he probably will still be here by hook or by crook. Another name that you didn't mention is Nacho Monreal. And I think there's a bit of confusion, really, over what exactly his future entails. But is it the contract extension or not?
Yeah, there's some talk that it had been extended, but there's been nothing official about it. And his contract is up at the end of the season. So, which is on Wednesday, basically. So maybe we'll get some clarity there. Okay, here's a question. It comes from Megan Cantle, and this is sort of something that feeds into my Mustafi fear. And she says, what are your thoughts on the rumour that this could be Koscielny's final game for us? Because there were stories during the over the weekend that L'Equipe said, you know, this could be his final game. He wants a longer contract. He's only got a year. There's interest from Leverkusen, from Monaco, from possibly Nantes, another club that I can't quite remember, Milan, a potential destination for him. Like if Gazidis takes Koscielny from us rather than Mustafi, I swear to God, I'm going to find that guy and I'm going to paint his head with Hammerite. Whatever that stuff you use to paint gates, you know, keep the rust off.
I'd love to see that happen. And if it looks good, maybe I'll do the same. But with Koscielny, I'm really in two minds. I mean, I think we know he was probably going to leave last summer had he not picked up the injury he did. I think that was certainly his intention. And I don't know if it's that he wants to go back to France or sunnier climes or just wants a new challenge or a new lifestyle for his family. Could be anything, really. But I'm in two minds because on the one hand, I'm like, well, look, he's 33. He's sort of playing on one leg. He's not someone that we should be building around. So it would be good for the club in a way to forcibly move on and invest in a defence that's got more sustainability and can play, you know, every week, is more robust.
Mm.
The other side of the coin goes, well, he's our best defender. Mm. And I don't know if I have the faith that with our budgetary constraints and our technical director issues that we'll necessarily be able to bring in anybody nearly as good this summer. So I would rather see him here, to be honest. I would rather see him here. I mean, I couldn't hold it against him if he was like, look, this is the move that I want to make for my career, to prolong it by a few more years, get a longer deal. Because, you know, I wouldn't equally say, let's give Koscielny a new contract. That doesn't feel like a hugely smart move either.
Yeah.
But I would, if we could somehow convince him, look, give it one more year while we sort of try and make this defensive transition away from you and hopefully not towards Mustafi, that's what I would like. How do you feel about it?
I think I'd keep him for one more year. I don't think there's any problem with letting a player go for free when he's 34 years of age. The issue is when he's 27 years of age or 28 years of age and probably at his peak, and therefore you're letting a very valuable asset go. Whereas with Koscielny, if he does one more year, plays less frequently, which I don't think he can play the same kind of schedule he played this season. You know, I just don't. I think we pushed him too hard. I'm slightly surprised that he hasn't broken down, because he is still managing that tendonitis issue in his Achilles, and he's come back from a very, very serious injury.
I think we've seen him right on the edge, though, haven't we?
For sure, for sure. So I would like to keep him for one more year. I think he would be good for someone like Holding, maybe Mavropanos if he stays around, but I suspect he might go on loan. If you are bringing in a young French central defender, which is the rumour, isn't it? This guy, what's his name? William Sabina?
Is that yes. Him? I mean, he's very young, though, isn't he? He's a teenager still.
No, that's not his name. What the hell is this kid's name?
I'm sure Sabina is right. I mean, is it?
I don't know. I'm looking it up here.
It's not Sabina.
What is it?
I don't know. But Sabina Arsenal does not return the correct results on Google.
Okay, hang on. I'm coming.
We are ITK here, guys.
We certainly are. Hang on.
Arsenal.
What the fuck?
Arsenal young French centre half. Here we go. Arsblog News, 20th of May. Arsblog News, even. Article by Arsblog. According to Spanish journalist Kike Marin and Charles Watts of Goal, Arsenal are interested in signing young French defender William Saliba.
Saliba, not Sabina. Okay, Saliba.
So he's an 18-year-old at Saint-Étienne, played 19 times for them this season.
Le French Johnstones.
And he's playing in Ligue 2, I believe, is he? With Saint-Étienne?
No. Saint-Étienne are they not in...
I don't know. I think they're in Ligue 2 now. Let's have a look.
We are really displaying our knowledge here. No, they're in Ligue 1. Ligue 1.
Ligue 1. Fourth in Ligue 1.
Yeah, Ligue 1.
Oh, sorry, Saint-Étienne.
No, sorry to me as well. I said that and you just...
No, I'm only sorry to Saint-Étienne.
Okay.
Bloody hell, 66 points in Liga.
Yeah, and he played quite often towards the end
above
of the
Marseille.
Season. I think I actually wrote that in the article that you got his name from.
Oh, right, if I'd carried on reading.
If you carried on reading. I mean, there's an argument to be made that I should also remember what I've written.
Sure.
But there's so much going on, James. How am I supposed to remember all this stuff?
Forgive me while I shock you all. I've never seen William Saliba play. I mean, given the fact that I didn't know his name 2 minutes ago, that won't surprise you. But, yeah, look, I'm all for it, bringing a young centre-half. But I would rather keep Koscielny around. The problem will be, Koscielny will think to himself, he's got a better chance of getting a two-year deal or a two-year deal with an option for a third this summer than he does next.
You know,
yeah. 'Cause he's that year younger. He's not had a relapse of his injury. You know, if that happens to him, it could really hurt his credentials in the transfer market. And also, if he lifts a trophy as Arsenal captain on Wednesday night, he might just think, that's the end, isn't it? That's the perfect
end
to the story.
Good way
and
to
it
go
very
out.
Hard for the club to deny him that.
I agree. But surely his responsibility as captain goes beyond lifting a trophy and ensuring that we don't have Mustafi next season.
That's his real responsibility.
No, I mean, I think that is... if he does want to go, and I think after 9 years, he'll be going into his 10th season, if we win a trophy, it is very difficult for the club to deny him a move. So it is maybe a consideration that we hadn't really thought about. Another little story to get through this summer. But I would keep him if I could and let him play out the final year of his contract, because I do think he's still a good player and I think he might be a valuable voice in a dressing room, which, you know, when you look around, is losing Petr Cech, who is a hugely experienced and one of the big voices in the dressing room. Aaron Ramsey, a very experienced player, a big personality in the dressing room, if not in front of camera. You know, he is a very well-respected guy. Danny Welbeck, big personality as well. He's also going. If you lose Koscielny alongside that, there is a bit of a gap, isn't there, in terms of leadership and experience within the dressing room. Who are the main guys? Who are the guys who are going to push this team? It's going to be Lacazette. It's going to be this Aubameyang, Xhaka, Socrates, I guess, to a certain extent. But beyond that, you know, I mean, the experienced guys, Mesut Ozil is not going to be the guy, is he? He's not the guy who's going to G everybody up and get on it. So I think there's another consideration there besides what happens on the pitch. So there you go. Anyway, your question.
This question is from the Discord channel, and it's from Singapore Guna. And they ask, with Arsene Wenger looking for a job in football that isn't necessarily a managerial role, do you think we should try and get him back at the club in a different capacity, maybe technical director?
No.
No, I agree with you.
No. I think he casts, or still casts, too big a shadow. So if after 1 year of Unai Emery, let's say we win the Europa League, I'm living for this, by the way. So, you know, everything is predicated on winning the Europa League on Wednesday. And then you bring in Arsene Wenger as the technical director of the club. I think it just, no, there's too much that doesn't work there. You know, it doesn't send the right message to Emery. I'm not sure it's a job that Wenger would want to do, even though I think he probably would be really quite well suited for it, based on what we heard from Raul Sanyehi in the interview, you know, when he talked about the role of technical director and what they do and what their function is, you know, as he said to what was it? I can't remember exactly what he said, but about the technical direction of the club for many years is to do this. You know, he really does have the attributes that you would need in terms of intelligence, knowledge of the game, a belief in how a team should play, you know, which is something that I think is a little bit in flux at the moment, because under Wenger, there was this ideal, wasn't there, in terms of how Arsenal should play football, that we had repurposed ourselves as a kind of, like, this was in some way the impact that Cruyff had at Barcelona, in a way, in that he imprinted a style on the club that would last forever and ever and ever, and that whoever came in as a manager or as a coach would kind of have to carry on that tradition, if you like. You know, the same way that they have these expectations at Barcelona or at Ajax or wherever it is that, you know, this is how the game is played and this is what you should try to do. Whereas I don't think that's the case, you know, under Emery. He's ploughing his own furrow in a way. So I think it would just be the wrong decision, even though I could see why maybe in different circumstances he could be a guy who could do a good job.
Yeah, he has all the right attributes, but he is the wrong man, basically. And I thought that was interesting. You know, Raul did speak about he had his little diagram, didn't he, that flashed up of the structure of the club and the you know, I mean, it's corporate speak, a lot of it, but he did speak about the technical director being responsible for preserving the sort of tactical identity of the club, you know, and the philosophy, I think it might have been a word he used, which is a big responsibility. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be Edu who steps into that breach.
Yeah.
But, yeah, very interesting. And I basically don't think Arsene being particularly close to the new head coach is healthy at this point. But nice to see him pop up. And he was as erudite as you'd expect.
Yes, he was. Spoke quite well at the launch of this data website that he's involved in called Playmaker. Mm-hmm. I think it is. So
yeah, I saw someone saying that he and Mathieu Flamini are going to club together and buy the club, take over in the next few years. So I'm looking forward to that.
Best of luck to both of them for that. It's going to take something to make that happen. Okay, here's a question, and it comes from Martin, who is at Pitbull Torreira, and he says the final is level. We're in the last minute of stoppage time. We're 1-on-1 against Kepa. Who do you want to take that chance, Aubameyang or Lacazette?
We're 1-on-1. Well, you know all about my nightmare last night, Aubameyang missing a clear 1-on-1. If we're through and we're away from the defence and it's just the shooting part of it, I probably would go Lacazette. But if it's like there's still a lot of ground between, you know, the player and the goal, I'm going to say Aubameyang because I think, you know, no one's going to catch him. I do think Lacazette is fractionally the better finisher of the two. So I would choose him. What about you?
I can see your point, and despite the fact he scored 31 goals this season, when I'm thinking about this, all I can think about is Aubameyang missing, which is weird. It's so weird. But I think I go with Aubameyang.
The reason to go with Aubameyang is I think they score different types of goals, and that feel, you know, running clear of the defence 1-on-1 was the question. And, you know, you think of Aubameyang, don't you, in that situation?
Yes. That's where I think I would go with him. I think I'd go with him. And he did score one recently, didn't he, where he went around the goalkeeper having gone clean through?
Yeah.
Was it? Oh, could have been Valencia. I can't remember. But, yeah, I think I'd go for him. It just feels to me like if there's a story to come out of the final from one of our strikers, I just have a feeling it's going to be Aubameyang who's going to score the goal. So that's just
gut
feeling.
He was so spectacular in the semi-final, so if you can carry on that form into the final, then it'll be absolutely brilliant.
Here's a question. I'll let you go now in a second. this is from the Discord as well. It comes from Dumbledore's Gunt, which is...
What a name.
What a name indeed. And it really does evoke some startling imagery. But he says, with the transfer policy looking to be investments in up-and-coming young players, is there not a risk that you end up with a team of nearly men in the next 5 years, talking the likes of Danielson, Vela, Ali Adier, etc., who are all highly rated young players who turned out to be flumps?
Yeah, they were kind of Dumbledore's Gunts of players, some of them, weren't they? But I think that's a good point, but I think it's infinitely preferable to have a team of young players with potential than older players who aren't quite what they used to be. And there are two reasons for that. One of them is financial. Essentially, you've got decent investments there who are going to return some value probably at some point. Even if they don't pan out as you plan, at least it's not going to be like, well, they're 30 and now no one wants to pay any money for them. And the other thing is that I think just as a supporter, you know, what we all want is the sense of a bright future and, you know, that things are going to improve down the line. And I think you can kind of get invested and excited about young players with potential in the way that you can't someone who's sort of been around the block. And so I think it's sort of a more exciting, interesting journey, you know, like during that sort of, you know, post Emirates Stadium move era where we had a lot of young players on that list mentioned then. We didn't mind kind of projecting forward and imagining what they might be quite so much because it felt like an exciting destination. It felt like it was going to be a bit of a journey we could all go on together. So I think that that's actually would be quite positive, and I'm excited about that as a plan. I think we're getting some fresh blood in this squad. What do you think?
What do I think? Yeah, I mean, I think it is probably our best way of rebuilding. And of course, you're never going to have 100% hit rate when it comes to young players or even experienced players. You know, in the transfer market, you're not going to have a 100% hit rate. There are going to be some who just don't make the grade, some who look good and start well and then maybe fall away, and then maybe someone you don't expect comes and makes themselves a regular. But in terms of our budget, in terms of what we can do in relation to what other clubs are going to do and how we need to do it, I think our best strategy is to identify young and up-and-coming talent and go that direction. And, you know, yeah, look, what would you rather? A £7 or 8 million young Frenchman who comes in and doesn't make the grade after 2 or 3 years, or, you know, spending £35 million on somebody who is experienced enough and established enough but still doesn't make the grade. You know, I'd rather take the punts on the young players.
Well, all signings are risks, aren't they?
But yeah, of course.
You can mitigate that risk. And I think signing young players is a smart way for a club with our restrictions to do that. And the rumours that we're seeing, you know, Martinelli, the Brazilian, is it Claude Maurice, the attacker from Lorient?
Mm.
We are reading a lot. We talked about the French centre-half, a lot about sort of very young players, guys under the age of 21 potentially coming in. And I think you need balance as well. I think, you know, when you look back on sort of post-2006 teams, I think there was a bit of a lack of experience to go alongside the youth, and that's where someone like Koscielny would be really valuable. You know, you do need some figureheads in the dressing room. You do need some leaders there. But we do need to regenerate. We do need to rejuvenate, and I think signing young players is a good way to do that.
Yeah. Actually, I'm just going to continue on because I had another question on this. Another one from the Discord. Bear with me here. Can you search in the Discord?
I don't
Let's
know.
Let's see. I don't think you can. I'm not finding it anyway. But it was about Alexis Claude Maurice.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't find that question. But also from Emmanuel Lane at Tribo King, who says, there's a lot of debate about how unfair it would be for academy players if we signed youngsters from abroad, i.e. Claude Maurice, competing for a spot in the team with the likes of Saka and Amici. What are your views? Is it fair or unfair competition?
I think it's fair enough, personally. I kind of think if you do it, you know, if the players are good enough, they will make the breakthrough. And I suspect, you know, you can look at Saka and Amici and Claude Maurice and think, do you know what? Only one of those players might go on to be the top player that we kind of envisage them as. And I think having that competition, if anything, might, you know, drive them on and you know, push them along the way. I think it's tempting to think, oh, it's not fair, you know, we've got these great young players, but as we've just talked about, how often do they actually deliver on the potential we imagine them to have? Very rarely. So I think you do have to hedge your bets a little bit with young players. And, you know, just think back to the five British internationals that we signed to long-term contracts as part of the British core, and how, you know, only really Aaron Ramsey became the player that we sort of thought he was going to be. So, yeah, I don't have a particular issue with it. What about you?
I think it all depends on how they view the readiness of these young players. I think there's something interesting happening in terms of the kind of players that we're targeting. You know, this young Brazilian kid is coming in, Martinelli. I'm not sure whether he's like a more of a forward or a center forward than a wide player, but my sense was that he was a kind of a wide player. We've got Reece Nelson coming back. This Alexis Claude Maurice kid looks like the sort of player we're missing, and that's based only on the YouTube video or the video of him scoring all the goals. So I haven't seen any more, but just in terms of what he looks like as a player, he looks very quick, looks like he can finish, likes to cut in from the wings or make runs in behind. So we're looking to add pace and direct running into the team in wide areas. Mm. Right. So maybe that's an indication of where this team is going to go. So if you go down that road, maybe you also need to have a bit more depth in those positions. So there could be potential for the likes of Saka and Amici to play in cup games next season if they're not necessarily playing in the Premier League and hopefully the Champions League.
Yeah, and I think we're also getting a bit smarter in terms of using the loan market. You know, Nelson and Smith Rowe out at the moment. They could come back. They could stay out. And I think it enables you to keep developing players, but not necessarily on your time. And I think that's a really smart way to go because, you know, you could send a player out on loan for 2 years and then move out an experienced player and bring in a younger player. You can sort of create a kind of revolving door of players coming in and out. And I think the other thing about those young players, by the way, Claude Maurice and Martinelli, is they're versatile. You know, they can play probably in a number of different roles. And I think that's something Emery really prizes. And I suppose when people look at someone like Bielik or even Callum Chambers, that's something to mention for them too. They can flourish in more than one position. And if you're a manager who likes to change the shape of his team, not just game to game, but sometimes within a game, that kind of versatility, that multifunctionality could be really valuable to him.
Yes, very true. Very true.
Here's a question on a different tack from Flannyballs at Flannyballs. And they ask, Unai Emery is well known for his detailed tactical preparation for games. With this in mind, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what weapons he should give to the players to use on Eden Hazard. For me, it would be a chainsaw.
Chainsaw is a bit unwieldy, though. That's the problem. You know, if you're going to take to the field with a chainsaw, what if it stops? Yeah. You got to do the to try get it going again.
That's true.
I think there's a risk, you know, on the pitch.
It could be a bit bumpy. You can't just leave it running.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think you need something a bit more subtle, like a blunderbuss. No, that's also a bit unwieldy.
There have been shouts in the comments. I think Come on the Arse is shouting for a rusty bear trap.
Yeah, but you know, just one of our players would stand in that. That's what would happen.
Yeah, Maitland-Niles is going to stand in that, isn't he? You know, it's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah. What about...
Same with, like, sort of mines. You know, you could put mines down Hazard's wing, but then again, proximity mines are just going to go off as soon as one of our players...
It is a bit of a, you know, kill everything to kill one
Granit
thing.
If you put mines on the pitch, Granit Xhaka's stepping on a mine. Do you know what I mean? It's classic Xhaka.
What about some kind of throwing knives? Some kind of daggers or that kind of
throwing stars, the ninja stars.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd like that. Mm. I mean, again, you'd have to be careful because if you miss, they're ending up in the crowd and it feels like there could be repercussions there.
Yeah, nobody going to a game of football deserves a ninja star in the forehead like Butters.
Flanny Balls has also proposed Armand Traoré's knuckle dusters.
Yep. That would work. Socrates with a set of knuckle dusters. I mean, he's not that subtle, though, and with VAR...
VAR's going to pick that up, isn't it, all day long?
VAR is certainly going to pick that up.
VAR's not our friend in this scenario.
No.
If VAR doesn't spot the chainsaw, I think serious questions need to be asked of the VAR.
That would be a huge issue for...
Can you imagine? There's a guy with a chainsaw and the referee's like, okay, and he does like the TV screen charades motion.
Yeah, no.
He's going to go and have a look at it.
It's fine. It's fine. Hazard is there with like both legs lopped off.
They're not showing him the angle where you actually see him chop him in half, though. Why aren't they showing him that angle?
Yeah, the conspiracy theories would abound. I think we're just going to have to do it the old-fashioned way by being... good at football, which is a bit worrying.
That's the silliest suggestion I've heard so far.
It is a bit. I don't have any more questions, by the way.
Oh, right.
Okay. I'm all out. Have you got any more? I don't have any more.
Team for the final.
Done that one. Would you keep Ozil?
We've done that every week.
If everyone's fit, what's our best 11?
Oh, I've got a question for you.
Go on.
Are we going to win?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, I was worried for a bit.
Yeah.
Do you feel, is that how you feel like it's going to be a good day?
I feel like going to the toilet when sure. I think about it, but...
I've got a good feeling about those two forwards, I have to say.
That's where I am, basically. I think there's enough going on with those two for me to feel quite confident that they can offset the rest. Because Chelsea are missing a couple of defenders as well, aren't they? Is Rudiger is out.
Rudiger will be out, yeah.
David Luiz is in, you know.
Sure.
I mean, he can be fantastic. He can also be terrible. Are we going to win? I don't fucking know. I wish I knew. I wish I knew. This, you know, this is kind of potentially one of the best weeks of football ever.
Yes.
But also potentially one of the very worst.
I mean, I'm glad our game is first, I think. Because imagine if we were going into this with the shadow of the bad thing over us.
The shadow of the bad thing.
It would create an unbelievable pressure to deliver something. I mean, to be honest, our football club might have folded. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if we'd have the energy or the strength to even do this podcast.
Well, we're going to have to.
We're going to have to, but listen... There are two games this week, and if we get the right result in both, it will be glorious.
Exactly. Like, let's try not to dwell on the bad thing, the very, very bad thing that could happen, that might not happen, it might not happen at all. It could be the two good things that happen. So let's just...
Well, as long as the two good things are in play, then it's fine. If we don't win that final on Wednesday...
Are you going to watch the Champions League final?
I'm at a wedding.
You're at a wedding?
I'm at a wedding. So I probably won't be watching it anyway. I don't think I could bear to watch it. If I did, I would be sort of offering myself to the gods. Anything. If we lose on Wednesday...
But we won't. We won't.
But if we do... Then Saturday becomes one of the biggest games in recent memory for me. Like it has, like there can only be one result. There can only be.
Well, there are two results that I want this week, and I'm not being greedy when I say that I want both of them. And that
I need both of them.
Yeah, I need both of them. I think everybody listening to this podcast needs both of them. So let's...
But a game at a time.
Get one game at a time.
Get Wednesday sorted. Get Wednesday out of the way.
Exactly. We do what we got to do, and then we are all mug smashers for a few days, and...
That's it. And we get a few days of celebration irrespective. We win Wednesday night. You've got the whole of Thursday, whole of Friday, most of Saturday, before you might have to leave the country. So
forever.
Yeah, you might have to go and live in a hole in the ground and never come out.
Yeah,
but those 3 days, Thursday and Friday, we're going to live
fucking,
it up.
It's going to be fucking brilliant. It's going to be the best.
We're going to have a hell of a time. North London will be red for a bit, and then who knows? But we can't even think about that.
No, we can't, because let's not. It's not. It's just disgusting. It is disgusting. So let's not think about it. Let's think about winning on Wednesday. Let's think about celebrating. Let's think about the lads doing it for Mkhitaryan back home. Let's think about Aubameyang and Lacazette. Let's think about Danny Welbeck scoring a winner, or Petr Cech saving a penalty. Let's think about who knows what might happen. Carl Jenkinson exploding in a cloud of his own jizz. Let's think about all the positive things that we can
Eden
think about.
Hazard being sliced in half by a chainsaw.
And VAR not seeing it. It could be all glorious. So let's think about those positive things. We're going to be here on Thursday morning. We're going to do an Arsecast Extra. We hope that it is going to be...
Who knows what the mood could be like for that. It could be fantastic.
It could be the goodliest of mornings, James. The goodliest morning. But it could be. And let's hope that it will be. Whatever happens, though, we'll be here to share the joy or the pain with you. Thank you, as ever, for being here. Let's keep everything crossed for Baku. Hopefully the lads can do it, and we'll catch you on Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.